Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by the Chemo Girls. I'm sure you've noticed that you're only hearing one voice coming at you today. This is Sharon, and I'm delighted to be with you. Lucy's unable to be with us, and we'll miss her, of course, but no worries, she's safe and sound tonight. As for me, I just went swimming with the kids this evening across the street at the neighbor's house. And I was kind of overtaken with that end of season bittersweet feeling. You know, summer break is coming to an end and our little family's getting ready for the school year. And it kind of reminded me of last year about this time. This is when I learned that one of my dearest friends and her family was to move away. And in September, she did. They moved to North Carolina. And holy cow, was she ever missed. This woman is one of those friends who she just breathes life into everyone around them. She has a knack for that, like being kind and thoughtful and encouraging to others. My friend Raquel Corey makes me a better person. She is considerably younger than I am, but one day when I grow up, I want to be just like her as a wife and a mother. And not only that, but she and her husband are in ministry and have been for years. And because of her family's experience in ministry, as well as heartbreak that they've experienced, I think she comes to us with a unique perspective. She's not really coming to us with that cancer perspective per se, but as we all know, we all struggle with different things in our life, and life is going to bring pain or heartbreak to your doorstep at one point or another. So after she spent time ministering to people early on in their career, and then they went through their difficult times, now I'm sure plenty of wisdom has been afforded her in that experience. So I thought she would be in a great position to share with us. And I'll just have to tell you that Raquel and I, we like to laugh, and she's going to be silly and fun, and it's just one of the many things that I love about her. So, Raquel, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you. Those were such sweet things you said about me. I was not prepared for that. I felt a little teary. That was so sweet.
Well, I really totally mean every bit of it. I won't even go into the grief that I felt when you left, but I'm so glad that you're home, guys. She just got back home, and we're delighted to have them back. And so I guess what we'll start with is, you know, you did spend many years reaching out to those around you who were in pain or experiencing heartbreak through the ministry. So beyond your talent at just being there for people, I'm sure that your early experiences brought with you, you know, wisdom, things that were learned. Can you kind of talk us through some of that?
You know, I got married when I was 19. So like a week after we got married, it was bam, we were in ministry. Mm-hmm. I was a pastor's wife. So I think the people that I ministered mostly to would be younger adults and youth. We were youth ministers there. So, you know, every teenager's life is
dramatic ending.
Yeah. I mean, like it could be anything. There's always, you know, somebody's life is ending because, you know, their mom wouldn't let them get those genes or whatever. So a lot of that is what I dealt with. I think it wasn't until we were in our first position for about 2 years when we came to Waycross. Mm-hmm. And, we became youth leaders here, and we had a lot of small group situations where I had about 12 teenage girls that were under me who I mentored. And I think that was when I really started to see real heartache. I think what it was I just really got into their lives. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. It's so hard to be so into somebody's life that you would grieve with them in their hard times.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people want to do that, but that's what we did. And I've seen how doing that is and how not doing that is, because I think in our first position, I was definitely there for people, but I didn't get into people's lives. I was really too young to even know what that meant. So when we came here, I was maybe 21, 22, and I was really able to get into these people's lives and see their heartache. And I think that, you know, I did the best I could with not having a lot of life experience under my belt. I think my childhood, my mom was instrumental in teaching me everything I know and how to treat people. And mm-hmm. My parents just never treated anyone different. Everyone was the same, whether you had money, whether you didn't, whether you were a certain color, whether you weren't, whether you were from somewhere far, far away, or you grew up in the South. So I think that that was a gift that they gave me that I would certainly like to share with my children. So I think, you know, I did the best I could. I think I had some people go, you know, your normal things. I think when you're in ministry, death, of course, you want to be there for people. And I think, you know, I would go and try to be there for them. And, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. And I think the biggest thing was being there with people beyond the tragedy.
Right.
Everybody is there when tragedy hits. But 2 or 3 weeks after things settle down, I think is when people need people more.
Right.
You and I have been there for people in those situations where, you know, everybody's there during the hubbub of the situation. But later on, people tend to kind of forget. Or maybe it's uncomfortable to be one-on-one with someone who's had a lot of tragedy, because I think you don't know what to say. And I think used to I try to fill that quiet with something, you know, oh, I know how you feel, or I know this is hard, or oh, let me help you, and I'm sure that I can fix it, or I can help you. And you know, so I think that was how I tried to connect with people. I tried to, you know, well, I can fix this.
Yeah. And you want to.
Yeah.
You want to do something because you have that empathetic heart.
Yeah.
And you're feeling to some degree what they're feeling, and you want.
And I'm sure I was helpful. You know, I'm sure that I was.
Oh, I'm sure you were.
Yeah.
Too.
I mean, you know, I tried to. I'm sure I was very helpful to people, but yeah, I think, you know, I held my own pretty good. And
oh, yeah. Like I said, I know that you have a knack for that. You really do. You just have a natural ability. And I believe some of it comes straight out of your heart, but I know a large portion of it is due to your mother, because I have met your mother.
Yeah. And I'll say, just came to mind, was that she had told me when she was young, her best friend had to go to Vietnam, and he never came back.
Oh, my goodness.
And he had a sister. And, you know, she said to her mom, I don't know what I'm supposed to do to talk to her. I want to go visit with her, but I don't know what to tell her. And her mom told her, just go and sit with her. You don't have to say anything. It's not important for you to say anything.
I think that's something that people don't know. I really do. I think that people don't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So I think when someone, you know, tragedy hits, whether it be that doctor's phone call or, you know, the phone call saying somebody's gone, I mean, it could be anything. Sometimes you don't need to talk. So I think, like you said, I had a little bit of pre-training. I think I was pretty young, and I had a good handle on maybe, you know, how to be there for people because of my mom, you know. And she, even though she was never like in ministry as far as like a paid position or something like that, she's always been a minister.
Oh, sure.
So she, you know, she taught me everything I know, really. She's amazing. Yeah. My mom.
She's wonderful.
She is.
So, you know, then life moved forward, and of course it brought some pain and heartbreak to you guys' door.
Yeah.
And so can you tell us about that, you know, just as much as you're comfortable with?
Sure. Well, let's see. Tim and I had been married 4 years when our sweet Naveo was born, and she will be 9 soon. She is super fun, spunky little girl. After we had Naveo, we thought, well, let's, you know, try again, have another baby. And we, I was probably 6 or 7 weeks pregnant and, you know, started having some complications. And we ended up losing the baby, which was just heartbreaking. And I literally had to go and apologize to a friend who had had a miscarriage, because I said to her, I know exactly how you feel. Or, you know what I mean? And no, I didn't. I had to say, I am sorry that I said that to you. Because I think we tend to say that to people. You know, we tend to say, oh, I know how you feel. No. Because even if you're going through the same situation, you don't feel the same way that that person felt. So, yeah, that was pretty hard. And I think that people, they don't really like to talk about miscarriages. I think it's a tough subject to talk about. I try to talk about it a lot to people, because the more I talk about it, the more people come and say to me, oh, I had one and I never really talked about it with anyone. It kind of wasn't allowed. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, please talk to me about it.
This is something that people very quietly endure.
Yeah.
And strangely, you know, Lucy and I talk about the fact that it hasn't been that long ago. Even my grandmother, who, you know, I absolutely adored, she whispered the word. You know, she'd be in full-on conversation with you, and she'd be talking about somebody and say, oh, and they have cancer. And she put her hand over her mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
As if speaking out loud was going to give it an additional degree of power.
Right, yeah.
Or a larger path of destruction. Mm-hmm. And so I think that sometimes the most horrible things that happen, there's something about speaking them out loud.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for people to process. I like the fact that you were able to do that because, like with this, what we're doing, we're trying to bring the experience to people, not just people that are walking into cancer, mm-hmm. but the people around them that really have no idea what to do or what it's like. And so when you discuss this, this gives that camaraderie and that common experience mm-hmm. with people who are going through it or have been through it.
Absolutely.
But it also lends a little light on the subject for those who are standing around
absolutely
wanting to help.
Absolutely.
Because really, when you went through this, mm-hmm. for me, I was at a complete loss. Mm-hmm. At a complete loss.
Yeah, I remember. I think, I had people come and run to me and try to fix it, and there's just no way that you can fix it. And I think for us, this was for me, we had had deaths in the family, and those were very, really shook my husband's life because they were mm-hmm. maybe on his family.
Yes.
But for me, this was, because for me, as soon as I knew I was pregnant, I had plans for that child.
You were mama.
Yeah, I mean, that was my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I've shared this story before at a women's conference, and I had just women come up to me afterwards in tears and just say, I wish someone had been there to do this for me. My mom, you know, she lives 2 hours away. So mm-hmm. when we gave the phone call that, okay, this is happening, I had gone to the doctor and they kind of just brushed it off and said, just go home. Everything's okay. Call your doctor in the morning. So I had a friend who was a nurse who I had kind of been in contact with, and finally she called, how are you doing? I said, I'm just, I kind of gave her symptoms, and she was the one that, I'm sure not anybody would wanted to say it, but she said, Raquel, I think you're having a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you're having a miscarriage. And she said, have you called your mom? And she's very close to her daughter, so
yes.
I knew that she understood that I would want my mom. And she said, you need to call your mom, tell her to get in the car, and I'm going to come to your house until your mom gets there. And so she was at my house in 5 minutes flat, and Tim was a wreck. You know, he, bless his heart, he was running around. He didn't know how to help, and he just wanted help. When I think back, I just see like this man running back and forth here and there, calling the doctor, trying to fix it. But this sweet lady just sat with me and held my hand and told me everything was going to be okay, and told Tim, you know, you can give her this much Tylenol and you can give her this much. And I remember my mom getting there and running into me, and I never saw her leave, this sweet lady who stayed with me in probably the worst part of the miscarriage. I think that she was there for just the worst part. And I never saw her leave. She never made a big deal that she was there. She never said, oh, well, I was here with Raquel while she, you know, went through the worst of it. I don't think she ever even told anybody about that. She was just gone. She hugged my mom. My mom hugged her and said, thank you. She was gone. And I think that she didn't wake up that morning thinking, let me minister to somebody today. She didn't wake up and say, I'm going to, you know, impart some wisdom upon the next person who calls me, and I'm going to tell them exactly what they need to know. Honestly, I don't even know if she ever had a miscarriage, so maybe she didn't know how I feel. I mean, we really never discussed it. But she, when she saw the need and she knew I needed a mom, mm-hmm. and she was the closest one, so she got in her car and she was there. And I think that people like her have taught me, you know, how to minister. So, that sweet baby's name is Elmo. There's mm-hmm. a reason, because Nevaeh called it Elmo from the moment it was born. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for the child. Mm-hmm. In heaven somewhere, poor thing's called Elmo. And if it's a girl, I guess it would be Elle.
Yeah.
Or Elmoa. I don't know. So that is sweet baby number one, angel baby. Some people call them angel babies. And mm-hmm. anyway, so then we were very happy. We got pregnant again and we had sweet Sophie.
Yes.
And she is 4, will be 5 very soon. She is a diva.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Love her. So we were very, very happy about that. And then in between, then I have another daughter. Her name is Micah. She's 15 months now. But in between Micah and Sophie,
yes,
Yes, three girls. In between Sophie and Micah, we did have another miscarriage. I think no matter where you are in your pregnancy, the pain is the same. So as if someone lost a baby at 6 weeks or someone lost a baby at 17 weeks, which is where I was for the second miscarriage, it still hurts just as bad, even though the baby may not be as far developed or whatever. I think it just hurts just as bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for that one, we just thought everything was okay. I remember walking down the hallway in my house while I was still pregnant with that sweet baby. And I remember, like, the words coming in my mind saying to God, I must have known maybe something was wrong. And I remember saying, God, don't you take this baby from me, like, just worried. Yeah. And I think the night before we had a doctor's appointment, I was sitting on the couch and I said to Tim, you know, I just feel like I should have felt the baby move by now. I feel like I'm not feeling the baby move. And he's like, oh, it's nothing. You know, it's probably nothing. It's just, you just, maybe you just haven't noticed it. You know, you're busy. I had two little ones, you know. And so we went to the doctor. Our girls were supposed to be with us. For some reason, we dropped them off with some friends. We thought, well, we'll just go by ourselves. We were cutting up in the doctor's office. You know, Tim and I,
yeah.
There's not very rarely a serious moment. And, you know, we're just giggling, honestly enjoying the time, just the two of us sitting.
Yeah, I totally
and,
understand
you know,
that.
And we were eating Swedish fish.
Yeah.
And they were good. We were just joking, you know.
Yeah.
So doctor comes in, we're going to do a regular exam and, you know, they have a screen next to me and we see baby and it just got really quiet. It was just an odd feeling in the room and, you know, I'm beginning to panic inside. Mm-hmm. Something is wrong. And I think Tim knew before I did because he's just really good at looking at those screens and figuring out what he's looking at. Takes mm-hmm. me a little bit longer. And the doctor just turned off the monitor and he said, I cannot find a heartbeat. And I'm really sorry, but you guys have, you know, lost the baby. And he said, I'm just going to walk out and give you a few minutes. And you know me, I'm normally a very calm person. And not really, I didn't even go, I wasn't out of control even at that moment. But as Tim hugged me, I just kept saying, darn it, darn it, darn it, darn it. And I wasn't even, I wasn't cussing because you know me, I don't really cuss. But the worst I could come up with was, darn it, darn it, darn it, darn it. And I was just so mad that, I didn't know because when we went back, you know, and I had to have a DNC and it was just a really terrible time.
That was a horrible weekend.
It was
that
terrible.
Was a horrible...
Yeah, because I had to wait. Normally they would take you right away to do the DNC, but I had to wait through the weekend. I think the hardest part was, and I wonder if this is because, you know, I can't say that this is how somebody would feel like for you when you had breast cancer. Mm-hmm. I felt because see, technically I was still carrying the baby
mm-hmm.
and I felt like people were looking at me. Do you know what I mean? Like I felt like people were, and it was very uncomfortable and I wore really big shirts because I had kind of started to show. Third baby, guys. You got to show quickly.
Quickly, yeah.
And I just remember being very uncomfortable. And anyway, that was really hard. And I think my girls knew, they knew enough to know that we had lost the baby. We had to leave the doctor's office and go tell them. And I think that through that situation, though, when we got home, people were already at my house waiting for us to embrace us and, mm-hmm. you know, tell us it was all going to be okay. And there was a certain person, I won't name any names, Sharon, that was caught outside my front door. She didn't want to come in because she didn't know what to say.
It's like
my mom actually caught her.
I did not want to fall apart on you because all you needed was me.
I know.
Squalling. I know.
But she was so sweet. She was going to try to be very sneaky and leave a sweet letter outside of my door. And she even put rose petals out on my steps. And it was just the sweetest thing. Honestly, that was the right thing to do. If I had not known that, you know, if my mom hadn't caught you in the act,
mm-hmm.
You know, when I had seen that, it would have done exactly what you wanted it to do.
Right.
So A plus, I think that was a great idea. However, my mom caught her.
Yeah.
And made her come inside.
Yes, she did.
Because that's what my mom does.
Yes.
And Sharon just sat with me and you held my hand and you listened to my story. And I think that that's it, is that don't interrupt people. Mm-hmm. You know, when they need to tell their story, they just need to tell their story and they need to share their story. And I think that's part of the healing process is, I am falling all apart on you.
Well, but when you listen, let them know it's important to you.
Yeah. And I think that it's part of the healing process, saying it out loud, what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what happened. I was at the doctor and then this happened and then this happened. For me, it was a healing process. And so I think I've learned through my bad experiences, or I mean, you say that they're bad, but I think it's made me who I am. They've got to listen more. Mm-hmm. And back in the old days, you know, I was in fix it mode. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've just learned that people need to tell their story. And they need someone to listen to their story. And they need to hear the gruesome, gory parts. Mm-hmm. And you know, you need to be able to say them out loud. And so when people came to visit, the people that would sit and listen to my story, I think were the ones that helped me the most get through what I needed to get through. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, when I counsel people, I just listen a lot. I listen a lot.
Yeah. And it's hard. You know, we did a show some time back on what not to say to someone freshly diagnosed and what to say instead. And one of the things we really stressed is something you've said. Don't be afraid of the silence. It doesn't have to be awkward.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay to say nothing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to listen and not offer up.
Not know what to say.
Not say. Okay. I don't know what to say. I just have to be with you right now.
Yeah.
You know, I just do.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Raquel. I know this was really not an easy topic for you, but, you know, heartache is heartache.
Loss is loss.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that I've said over and over is an element of grief drops into your life the moment you hear the cancer has encroached on your body.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that grief is long term and some of it's easier to digest. But all forms of grief have commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this whole idea of how to minister to someone who is going through a hard thing, you know, who better to talk to me about that than you?
Oh, you are so kind.
So
I have totally not been a terrible life. It's actually been very good.
You've had a fantastic life. You have. Yeah. But you've also been a fantastic friend. And I appreciate you in that.
You are too kind.
So, all right, guys. It's time for us to wrap up the show. So those who listen know it's time for our not just surviving but thriving tidbit of the day. And today, I have the tidbit. I've already shared it with Raquel, so
it's a good one.
It has her stamp of approval.
I like it.
And for those of you that are new to the show, the tidbit is a moment in time where you put down the business of life and you look around you to see what life has to offer, and you step into it and you participate and you live in that moment. And that means different people for different, you know, in different places of life. But for me today, it came while I was swimming with the kids. We got to the neighbor's pool and we had forgotten the swimmies. Well, baby, you guys hear that over and over. Baby is not quite yet a swimmer. And I thought, today's the day that baby learns respect for the water. You know, I'll just keep a really close eye on her. And as I'm telling her to stay on the steps, she makes a beeline into the pool, down the steps. And as she hits the bottom step, she like lunges out into the pool.
I think she just thought she had the swimmies on.
She'd never been in a pool without them. She didn't understand that she wasn't going to stay up. You know, she didn't know what their function was. She does now. But anyway, so she twists her body all the way around and faces me. And she is underwater, suspended, with these huge blue eyes, like locking eyes with me underwater. Like, Mama, what are you going to do about this? You know? And I take two huge steps into the pool, grab her by the upper arms, and pull her up to my face. And she's just blinking, and all the water's running down her face, and snorting a little bit, you know, and coughing. And it seems sort of like a traumatic thing, and it seems like it's not so good. But I'll tell you what, I'm glad I was there. I'm glad I was tuned into my child at that moment. But what I saw in her face, as scary as it was this degree of trust that she had for me. She knew I was going to pull her out of that water.
Mm-hmm.
She knew it was going to be okay. She was not panicked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really precious thing. It was a really precious moment. So, Yeah, and we'll have the water wings next time, guys. Because she did it like three more times after that.
Oh, no.
No respect learned for the water. Anyway, so that's our tidbit. And now we're going to wrap up the show. But remember, go to Facebook, and any kind of comment that you have on the show, we'd love to hear. Our Facebook site is My Chemo Cocktail and the little and sign, me. You can find our show website at www.thecancersurvivorshow.com, and you can find our blog at www.mychemococktailandme, but and is spelled out. So that's it. As usual, remember, we're not just surviving, but we're thriving with you. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.